So, welcome to the second of the Proud Lily Whites podcast. My name's Sean Wallace.
And I'm Lee Johnson.
And we are both members of the Proud Lily Whites, which is the LGBT fan group for Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. So, we've been talking about a few things, and the World Cup continues for the women this summer. Have you been watching any of the games, Lee?
In between my busy schedule, I have managed to watch a few. Most recently, I managed to watch the England match. I did watch both of them.
Great.
And I've got to say, it had me on the edge of my seat at times. Definitely did.
I think as is typical of England in any major tournament, be it men or women, we haven't quite got to the levels that we know we can get to yet. I think the performances haven't been as good as they can be, but certainly gripping stuff. And I mean, the first game against Scotland, one of our oldest rivalries, Scotland in their first World Cup finals ever, and that was a really good game, and they really pushed us in that game.
Yeah, it was really a tight match between the two teams. Obviously England having a lot of the chances in there, and it was a really good, energetic game. You could see that, like you said, the rivalry between the two teams, you could see it on the pitch. They put everything into that. And yeah, there was some room for some improvements from both teams. But there's a lot to take away, especially for the Scottish team, like you said, being in their first World Cup, coming up against England. For them, like, as an English fan, I find it difficult to put myself in that position. But, you know, they went. And that second half, it was very much all to play for.
Yeah, and I mean, with the Scottish team, you've got to, the fact that four or five of their squad are still playing in Scotland, so still playing. I mean, most of those players play for the best side in Scotland, which is the Glasgow side. But those players are not yet professional footballers. The keeper was one of those players. Not yet a professional footballer, and they're putting in those performances and coming to a World Cup against an England side who are now, professionals. They're all playing in the Super League or abroad, so they really are, getting to be part of the elite of the game. And Scotland really showing that they can do that.
They're coming into the World Cup in scintillating form as well, after the back of the She Believes Cup.
Yeah, the England team, certainly should be on a high. I mean, Their friendlies immediately prior to the tournament were not as good as they might have been. And interesting point on that one, of course, is that England lost to New Zealand coming into the World Cup, but Wales won. They beat New Zealand, and that was thanks in large part to one of the Spurs women players, Megan Wynn, who's been, on the bench for Wales for a little while now. She came on with only about 5 minutes to go, 0-0, and lots of commentary saying that really she made a big difference, and Wales came away with a 1-0 win in that game. So fantastic result for Wales and for our very own Megan Wynn. So that's great result. But yeah, I mean, the England team it wasn't great the last couple of games, so I think we're still hitting our stride. And really, we've got a game against Japan coming up where we're already through to the last 16. I think we really need now to show what we're made of.
Yeah, definitely. And especially when you consider like our history against Japan, having been beaten by them numerous times and then finally getting that win against them, it's great that we've got that opportunity and there's not so much pressure on the match. We have qualified already. And of course, we'd love to go through top of the group unbeaten. It would be a massive statement to make. There's a lot less pressure on the team.
Yeah, and it was Japan who knocked us out 4 years ago. So, there really is some history there with Japan as well. We've beaten them more recently in the She Believes Cup, but I think it's going to be an evenly fought match, and it'll be really interesting to see what happens and to see, which players Phil Neville plays. He's already said that, he sees it very much as a squad. I think probably coming from his experience of playing and not quite making a World Cup, but he sees it very much as a squad of players and not a first 11 and then additional players. And we saw that in the second game against Argentina where he changed the keeper, and we saw somebody who's been to several World Cups and never actually got onto the field before making her debut. So that was fantastic as well.
Yeah, it was really good when you actually listened to him when he was talking at one of his press conferences, talking about the balance between the team and how, like you said, it's not a starting 11, it is a whole team. And he picks the team based on the opponents that's coming up and the way that they can play against them. It's really good to see a manager of the England's women's team doing that and playing to strengths. And I think that's really what we've started to see them grow over the last few years and develop is because they're adapting their style. They're not just playing the one way. They are very diverse in the way they play.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the point of view of moving forward for the next game, you know, we've seen Steph Houghton, who's the captain, who we know in general is, you know, really solid defender, great with a free kick, as Spurs fans saw this season.
Almost certainly.
you know, she's a fantastic player, but in the game, in the last game, she was, you know, giving the ball away too easily. She was making the wrong pass, and that just kind of emulates what's going on a little bit. Yes, we're getting the wins, and the performances are getting better, but I think there's still a lot to come from the Lionesses.
Certainly, and once we've got through the Japan match and see where we finish in the table and who we're up against in the round of 16, it'll be a very interesting once that pressure's back on again.
Yes, and there's, I mean, there's lots of great teams out there. Obviously, as we've said before, at this stage, you've got teams who are a very different level of the game. So you've got the Jamaican team, whose backroom staff are still all volunteers, not getting paid to do what they do. We've seen Thailand getting beaten by quite large goal lines, but then equally, we saw their reaction when they scored one, and how much it meant to them that they were, you know, scoring a goal at the World Cup finals. So you've got the whole gamut of emotion there in this World Cup. Really, that, you know, you still that a lot of it's kind of passed by in the men's game now. So, but you're still seeing it in the women's game. Once we get through the group stages, though, we will really start to see those elite teams and those teams that really are, you know, performing brilliantly, coming to the fore, and we'll be able to see some really tight games, I'm sure. Although I have to say, I was very impressed with the Australians as well. They're beating Brazil, really coming through, and you know they've had a really hard time in the last few years, behind the scenes. They're putting that to bed now, hopefully, and the Matildas are looking to do some great things in France as well. So lots of excitement to come in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully on our next pod we can cover a bit more of what's happened and
Yeah.
fingers crossed there'll be a lot of positives from the Lionesses.
But one other thing that's come of the World Cup as well is there's been a debate going on about the women's game, and Emma Hayes, actually manager of Chelsea, came out and said, well, actually, it's not sexist to be saying that women should be playing with a smaller goal and maybe even a smaller pitch, and that's offended quite a lot of people. But actually, what she's saying is that in a lot of women's sports, so hurdles, for example, women don't jump over the same size hurdle as men do because, you know, they're shorter. And in women's basketball, the ball is smaller, apparently. I didn't know that before. Apparently, the ball is smaller in that sport because it suits the women's hands better. And I can understand where a lot of these elite goalkeepers are saying, well, we can manage the goal fine. But I think the question has to be asked is, what kind of decision making went into how big a goal is, and was it based on the size of a normal man or not? Because actually, it's not sexist to say, hang on, let's have a look at this and let's make women visible again by saying, actually, that was designed without thinking about women. Maybe we do want to.
So, I did some reading up about the size of the goals and things like that, and it's been over 150 years since the last change in the size of the goal. I think it was 1863 when the current dimensions were set. And obviously, the average height for a man then has changed dramatically. I think back then it was between 5'6" and 5'7", depending on the sources that you look at, in comparison with well over 5'9" now. And I think the disparity between that was the standard, just the average height of a man is higher now.
Well, that's interesting.
They've adapted the game and we've just supposedly got used to that being the standard. And I think seeing the women's team playing it, that's how football was originally played, with that sort of statue of height.
Yeah, that's interesting. What you're saying is essentially that actually the size women are now is the size men are potentially when that goal was decided. So actually, it wasn't done with, although it was done with men in mind, it was done with men in mind, you know, a number of years ago. So maybe actually, there's no reason why the women can't be doing that. And that's what the elite goalkeepers are saying. They're saying it's not about the size of the person, it's about how athletic they are.
Yeah.
And it ties in with something else that, you know, that is true, certainly of the women's game and some of the things that have been discussed around the Women's World Cup, in that actually there hasn't been the coaching, there hasn't been the of women in goal and all over the pitch that there has been a men in the last 50 years. You know, women's football was illegal until not all that long ago in this country, as far as the FA were concerned anyway. So if you start to put in those good training drills, those good coaches that can, you know, really improve the women's game, then there's no reason that the women can't be performing on to the standard that the men are. It just takes a bit of time when generationally you haven't had that.
Yeah, I do find it a bit of a myth that people say that the women's game is associated with its lack of talent in the goalkeeping department. And I think that's a real, real insult to the game, because obviously there is the debate that's going on between should the size of maybe even the pitch be different, or the goal size itself be different. But at the end of the day, if you put the training in there, you've got players on the pitch that are the same height as these women. There's no reason they can't be performing to the same level once they get the coaching development. And like you said, once they start turning professional and it becomes their everything, that's really where we want to be with women's football. And I think we're definitely on the right track there. And every time we have the World Cup, it gets bigger and more crowds are turning up to the matches. And it's fantastic, the television cover, and it's really been brought more into the spotlight every cycle round. And I think it's just going to help develop the teams, the individuals, and the overall women's game.
Absolutely. I mean, you just got to look at the example on Sunday. So we had the USA against Chile. Now, it was 3-0 to the USA, but it would have been a lot more had the goalkeeper of Chile not been as good as she was. She made some fantastic saves, some fingertip saves across the size of that goal. So, you know, and a lot of teams actually now saying, hang on a minute, why doesn't she come and play for us? You know, so there are, you know, it is beginning to be shown that these things can be done. And I think we have to remember, though, as well, that whilst in many countries the women's game is improving and the TV coverage in this country is fantastic this year, the BBC is showing all the games in some format or another, and it's all over social media. But I was just reading today, actually, that, you know, in Nigeria, they're still not showing any of the games, even though Nigeria won the African trophy. They're coming as African champions to the World Cup, and still in their country it's not being shown on the television. So there is still a long way to go around the world for us to get anywhere near parity with the men, but it is getting there. And you know, when Nigeria come and they play and they feel like they're representing not only their nation but their continent as well, and the pride that they play with, I think that, you know, we're going to start to see some real shifts in attitude across the world.
Yeah, there's so much pride in the women's football, especially like you were saying earlier, when Thailand got their first World Cup goal, you could just see the emotion. It was reminiscent for me when I was out in Russia for the men's World Cup, watching the England-Panama match in Nizhny Novgorod, and the crowd who come from Panama were absolutely ecstatic watching that goal and the celebrations. It was a full-on fiesta, and it just shows how committed not only the fans are, but how committed these teams are. And for them, it is a really, really big deal, and it's so good when you get that final end product. And obviously a lot of development is still going on, there's lots to do, but for them to get that moment of glory, albeit a short one, it's really great to see that expression of passion for the game.
And this is what we talk about in terms of the power of football and what football can do and how it can bring people together in that moment. We all know that moment, whether it's for your club or for your country, where you're all pulling for the same thing to happen, and it happens in that moment where you all can enjoy it and forget anything else about the people around you other than they wanted that to happen too, and it's happened. And I think that's another key thing about the Proud Lilywhites and why we exist, is to harness that power of football and to turn it into something positive for everybody, you know, across football, to say there's not many things in the world that have the power that football does, that draw in as many people as football does, and has the power to, you know, really affect people in that way, because, you know, it does mean so much to people. It is so important, and it's a great way to bridge those gaps that otherwise exist.
So another thing that's been highlighted recently is the use of VAR in the Women's World Cup, and some of the decisions that have been used amongst the VAR world. You know, it really highlights why, one, we need it, and two, how it's being implemented. Again, there's lots and lots of discussion about, is it being implemented in the right way? Is it being used for the right things? And I think it's different for every fan. Like, for me personally, the things it's being used for at the moment is a good ground level to start at to get the system up and running. But I feel that there's more that it could be doing for players, especially in terms of, like, protecting them. You hear players quite often talking about they need more protection in the game, and I think VAR is a really good way that we can sort of be more proactive about it.
But I think they've really got to get that consistency message right with the things they're doing before we can move it on to anything else. I think there's been a lot of talk about it with the World Cup, and you know, following through from the Champions League final, we come into an England game, and you know, we see handballs in the box. Is it handball? Is it not? We're not really sure. Scotland player handballs in the box. All of us Spurs fans are sat there going, well, that's a handball in the current climate. That's a penalty, given the way that the decision has been made. And yes, it was given as a penalty. But then you see it turned around, and you know, at that point we were thinking, okay, we might not like that rule, but there is some consistency. Those decisions are being made as penalties, whether you like it or not. You know what's going to happen. But then Scotland, in their next game against Japan, had the opposite happen. They, their opposition player looked to have handballed in a similar way to all those decisions that were given as penalties, and it wasn't given, it wasn't even taken to VAR, and the ref on several occasions didn't take it to VAR. And so there's been a lot of questioning of, hang on, VAR is supposed to make it black or white, it's supposed to make it, that's the answer, and it's just not happening when there's that lack of consistency. It felt like we were getting there, but then the Scotland game happened and seems to have taken a step back.
Yeah, it seems to be that way in quite a lot of the major tournaments. It's there's a level of consistency, and then there's one or two decisions that just go against everything that's happened previously. And like you say, in the Women's World Cup, it's definitely happened again. And I think it's one of those things that this is why it's been introduced slowly, and it's not been just brought into everything all at once, because they needed to iron things out like this. And I think some of the rules, they may need me to clarify them, like they've clarified the handball rule a little bit more in terms of the body position to try and assist with that. But again, there's no point in changing the laws of the game and everything like that if it's not going to be enforced consistently. And it's one of those things, it's very difficult, because there's never been VAR referees, a bar a little bit here and there in different leagues. So they're all trying to implement these laws from a retrospective point of view, and the pressure that must be on them as well. It's all quite new, and I think over time it will iron itself out. And I think in the women's game especially, it's still quite new to them, and I think definitely going to be beneficial to the whole game, like it has been in the men's game so far.
Well, controversial view there. I think they've been beneficial in the men's game consistently, but certainly I think you know, it's early days and there's a long way to go, and we've just got to wait and see really how it plays out. But I mean, consistency in any aspect of refereeing is always questionable, isn't it? And people are always unsure, people are always willing to say there's a lack of consistency. It just needs to be tackled across the referees, and I think they're getting there with it, but VAR brings another level, doesn't it, and a different take on that.
It does, and looking ahead to the next set of fixtures in the Men's Premier League, now they've all been announced, there's quite a few fixtures in there where you think, well, definitely going to be keeping your eyes on VAR for some of the challenges that's going to be flying in there.
Well, yeah, it's certainly an interesting list of fixtures, isn't it? I think from a Spurs perspective, everybody was expecting certain things to happen. You know, Arsenal in November. But
first match away from home.
Yeah, quite different from usual, isn't it? And lo and behold, we've got Arsenal at the end of August, and we're at home for the first game.
And what I found really interesting was when you actually look through the fixtures, we don't play any of the other top six teams in consecutive matches. There's always a different team in between them. And I think at the start of the season, it is quite an intense start, but that's the way we want to start. We want to start the way we mean to go on.
Well, you need to hit the ground running, don't you? And I think it's beneficial. And now, you know, with the new stadium and things in place, there's no reason why we can't hit that ground. I think great first game, Aston Villa in their first game back in the Premier League. Great for them to come and see the new stadium, and I'm sure John Terry will get a very warm welcome.
That's going to be a great atmosphere there. They're very, very excited for that.
Yes, yeah, first day of the season going to be fantastic. And also, of course, Villa have got an LGBT group as well that we could be catching up with and finding out how they're doing. They're quite a new group, I think, so that'd be good to meet up with them.
Yeah, fantastic. We'd love to be able to get a meet-up in pre- or post-match with them. Hopefully we can even talk to them and see if they'll come and join us on one of these pods. I think that would be fantastic.
Yep, that would be great. Get somebody to chat to and find out what they're expecting from their season, and They've already started making signings this summer, which is
Yeah,
more than Spurs have. So they'll obviously be excited already, and hard not to be excited coming back to the Premier League.
it's going to be a really, really great season for them, I feel. You don't want to hedge your bets too early, but I do fancy them to come up and stay up. I mean, there's such rich history with that club. And it's great to have them back in the Premier League. It really is.
Well, I remember when I was at university, I was in the Midlands, and I went to Villa Park a few times, and it is a Premier League stadium. There's no doubt about that. It's and when I was at uni, it was the period where Villa would always start the season by being in the top 10, and then Christmas would come and they gradually fall away. But they've got such a great history, and hopefully they haven't been away for too long, so hopefully they won't feel too much of a change coming up, and they've still got some of those key players, and I'm sure Jack Grealish will relish the opportunity of being in the Premier League again, as will many of them, and he's, as I say, already brought in some new players, and all Spurs seem to be doing is talking about it.
Yeah, that's all you seem to see on the socials these days. Transfer rumor this and who's leaving that, and it's I feel like I'm in a windmill with it. It's just rolling down the hill and I'm just waiting to find out what's going to come out of it at the end.
Well, it always seems to be different, doesn't
I'm trying to actually avoid social media at the moment, just
it?
from the speculation until something's confirmed.
Well, I'm very happy to read this at the moment that everybody had decided Christian Eriksen was out the door. He was gone. But the mood more recently seems to be that actually Spurs haven't given up, and he's said no to Manchester United, and Real Madrid might not be coming in for him, and therefore we might get to keep him, which I don't think would be a bad thing at all, and be great to see him staying at Spurs and putting in another great season, along with some of the names that we've been linked with, a couple of young English players, including Sessegnon being linked with us, and then some really great midfielders from Europe. So lots to be positive about, and if nothing else, it seems pretty positive because we have actually been putting in bids, so clearly the rumours were right, and we are going to spend some money this summer.
Yeah, the intention's there, and that's what we like to see. I think every club likes to see that. I'm just very excited for, I think Christian Eriksen recently, personally for me, I think his head's been out of the game a little bit. Still puts in the performances, but you can just see that he's not 100% in it. And I think after this transfer window, it is either he is. It seems to me from the reading what he's been saying and what other people have said as well, it seems that it's very much either I'm going to go and try something new and that's going to be that, or I'm staying here and we're going to make it successful here.
Exactly.
And I think with the summer signings that we are being linked with and transfer rumours that are running around, I think he needs to have that season to at least give it a go with these new boys, because I think it's a whole different style of play, and they bring something new to the table and a little bit of healthy competition as well. And I think it's just going to refocus, not just Christian, but I think other members in the squad as well. Competition for places is always needs to be healthy,
Absolutely.
especially with another season of Champions League football.
But and you think about how important Christian Eriksen's been to the team this season, how many late goals he's either made or scored, how many times he's done that, and he's been the one that has made the difference. And if his head's been out of the game and he's done that, what can he do in a season where he's back committed fully to the team and not thinking about where else he could be playing? And I think, a lot of the players this season is there's a lot of talk this summer about who's staying and who's going. Hopefully, what that means is the players, if they do stay, are committed to the club, want to be there, and know that actually, it's been decided that they should stay. Danny Rose has been very vocal about the fact that he doesn't know what's going to happen, but he really wants to stay. Having had a turbulent couple of seasons, he's now back in the headspace where Spurs is where he wants to be. Which is great because, the end of this season he's been fantastic, and playing really well, and we want to see that continuing. But there's all, we're always looking to do better. And of course, the latest rumours, a certain Dutch footballer who seems to look up to Jan Vertonghen. So lots of people saying, well, come and play with him then.
Yeah, come meet him, Toby, play together. Why not?
Absolutely. Would be fantastic. But whatever happens, I think we do trust that Poch knows what he's doing in the transfer market. We know he's not going to go in for the big stars necessarily because the wages aren't there, and that's not really the way he brings people in. He brings people in who are, you know, still got a little way before they reach their peak, and he likes to bring that out. And you know, money is always an issue as well. You want to get the best you can for your money. So we trust that he's going to bring in good players. We just have to hope that it all comes together, and it'll be, as we said last time, you know, getting some of those players in before pre-season begins, so they can start to really, they can start with the rest of the team and bed in over pre-season.
Yep, the intention is definitely there from Levy, and fingers crossed there. I know we said this last time, but fingers crossed we are going to get some of those pens on paper.
Yes, it's all looking good. So another great season ahead, hopefully. It just does feel like the football keeps on coming, doesn't it? Which is great, because I don't know about you, but I'm starting to have those withdrawal symptoms. I'm glad we've got the fixtures now for the Premier League, because it means we can start to plan. But I just need the fixtures now to come out for the Women's Super League, so that I can really plan what I'm doing next year.
Get everything all planned in together.
Yes, because you know, I'm starting to go, oh, I'd like to do that holiday, but I don't know whether I'm going to be watching Spurs, so I can't do that just yet.
Yeah, you don't want to be making too many plans.
No. Need to be at as many of those games as possible. So come on, Super League, let's get those fixtures out. We know when the Continental Cup games are going to be, but not yet who we're going to be playing in those games. So we're getting there, but they haven't even announced a date that they're going to be telling us. So fingers crossed it's not too long away.
And hopefully we've got some new signings that we can be testing on the pitch.
Yes. Well, I mean, the other thing to say, of course, is depending on what happens with the men's team, the women's team, well, the women's team definitely will be having a friendly against Arsenal in August. It's the weekend of the Newcastle game, so let's hope they don't change that, because at the moment the Newcastle game obviously is on the Saturday, but if they change it for the television, it might get moved and that might cause problems. But on the 25th of August, Spurs women are away at Arsenal women, and we did that pre-season last year. So hopefully it'll be a closer game this year. Obviously Arsenal still streets ahead of us in terms of the history in the women's game, but hopefully we'll give them a bit of a tougher test this time, and hopefully they won't move the Newcastle game, so we can all go down and support Spurs women as they will be now.
We'd love to see as many of the proud Lily Whites and other Spurs fans along to that match as we can. That would be a fantastic, I think, experience for everyone. Maybe we can even get a nice big group photo of everyone while we're there.
Absolutely, and you know, actually a good warm-up for the first North London derby in the Premier League season, which happens the next weekend.
Yep, get all our singing voices ready.
So fingers crossed that the TV doesn't mess up our opportunity to go and see that one. But we won't know until, till Pride, because the TV fixtures for the next month are released on the 6th of July. So we'll all be at Pride together to find out.
Yep, fantastic. And Pride this year, I know we said it last time, but I'm very, very excited for it. I've not been able to make the last two or three Prides through different commitments.
Yeah.
However, I have booked this one off, and there is no way that I'm missing it.
Excellent. We've got a minibus that will be, you know, all Spurs up, and there'll be loads of us down there, hopefully, meet people along the way. We're going to have selfie frames, and we're hoping that the weather will be cool enough that Chirpy and Lily can join us.
It would be fantastic to have Chirpy and Lily. We missed out on having them last year, but we definitely want to get them there this year.
And of course, you know, all proud Lily Whites members, you're welcome to join us. And indeed, you know, any players out there who want to come and join us from Spurs, let us know. We'll be happy to welcome you along. You can come and walk with us by the side of the minibus and show your support for the LGBT community.
Yeah, so feel free to get in touch with us if you do want to join us. Our Twitter handle is @SpursLGBT. You can message us or tag us on there. Alternatively, you can message us on Instagram @ProudlilyWhites. And you can find us on Facebook by searching Proud Lily Whites.
And if you don't want to join us, but you're going to be there, do wave to us and say hello. Have your picture taken with a selfie frame and or with Chirpy or Lily. You know, lots of opportunities. But if you're there, make sure you say hello to us. We'll be, you know, we'd love to see you out along the route waving at us.
So thank you for listening to the Proud Lily White podcast, episode 2. Join us again soon for episode 3. We'll be discussing more events of what happens at the World Cup, and hopefully a little bit about Pride, either before or after. And looking forward to discussing, fingers crossed, some transfers.
Indeed, and some fixtures for the women's team. Thanks very much for joining us, and we'll be with you again soon. Do say hello to us if you're at Pride. This is the Proud Lily Whites saying goodbye from episode 2.